This is Movies, a podcast by the Act of Cinema. And with me today, of course, it's my one and only co-host. It is Hans, looking very Joe Pesci in Home Alone this evening. How are you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What are they? What bandits? I'm so
the
bad.
Wet bandits. Yeah, you are not good on the spot. When the pressure's on, and I've said this many times on Ba-Bang, which we have a new episode out as of the time we're recording this with one Mumkey Jones, Simmy and Jimmy. I'm going to start calling him Simmy and Jimmy from now on, although I know his real name. And we're talking about Hoochie Daddies, which maybe we'll get around to covering on this program, Movies. All 12 hours of it is very cinematic. It's like a better version of Fish Tank.
Did you see the 12 hours?
I've seen about 44 minutes of the 12 hours, and that is good enough for me.
Yeah. That's why when you say that we might cover it, I'm like, I mean, I'm already going to watch, what is it? What are those two shows that
Euphoria?
You really like from HBO? Yeah.
Berlin Euphoria, Alexander Plotz.
No, not that one. Unless we get the 100. But that's not going to happen.
That's a great segue here because we are doing our first $100 tier movie. And it is Alejandro Jodorowsky's The Holy Mountain. This comes in from One Hot Dog 10. Hot Dog 10 has been a big fan for the Civic TV days, at least. So thank you to Hot Dog 10 for selecting this movie. This is one of Hans. He's one of your people, right? He's Mexican?
No, he's Chilean.
Oh, fuck.
He's Chilean. Oh. I think in Mexico was where he was able to get money to make his movies, but he's from Chile, yeah.
This was shot in Mexico, though, wasn't it? No?
Wasn't it?
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I would say, see, here's the thing. I watched this movie on archive.org, which I'm a big and ardent supporter of. I'm going to buy some archive.org merch very soon. They have fingerless gloves you can wear. I'll look like Big J Okerson, but somehow worse. And I watched it on there and I was very concerned. It was 2 hours. It was a 2-hour movie. And I know that he's very abstract and very crazy. I had never seen one of his movies before, aside from one maybe about 10 years ago when Jodorowsky's Dune had first come out, because I was a big fan of that documentary. And I remember I tried to get an interview with that director several times, and he promised me, he was like, hey, listen, he canceled on me like 3 or 4 times in a row and kept doing the, hey, let's just reschedule thing, which we've done before to like Dakota Proctor. We wound up in a loop of having to reschedule 9, 10, 12 times. Just like, I would feel like a bit, I would feel like I'm getting played if somebody rescheduled me that many times. But this director was like, listen, it's just my internet, my phone. My phone's not working. My phone battery's dead. We'll do it next Monday. We'll do it next Thursday. Hey, we'll do it next Saturday. I promise you. I promise on everything. He said, literally, I promise you. We will do this interview. And it never happened. So he lied to me. He played me like a fool. And I was just an eager, opportunistic 22-year-old at the time. So I just took
his name again.
I don't remember his name, to be honest with you. And that's not a dig at him. He did a great documentary. He made me very excited. By the way, I saw Dune 2 this past weekend. And it really emphasized how big of a waste of time that first Dune movie was, because this was the real movie. This was the actual movie. So I want to compare it to something else real quick. It would be like, you know, think about The Dark Knight, okay? Think about The Dark Knight movie. We all have like a good recollection of what that film was like. It would be like if you divided The Dark Knight into two films and the entire first half is him in the parking garage beating up those Batman wannabes and the Scarecrow. And then the rest of the movie is the Joker and Two-Face and what the actual film is all about. That is what this Dune 1 and 2 split is to me. It's like, okay, we got to the desert. What now? It didn't really feel like the structure and the act structure of that movie didn't work whatsoever. And I was shocked by myself when I went to Letterboxd right after seeing Dune 2 and seeing I had given that first Dune movie 3 stars, because that was a polite 3 stars. And I would revoke that because I hated that movie.
Yeah, I don't think I was very positive on it when we did that episode, was I? I was very bored by it. And it's just a lot of setup. And I understand that you're doing a trilogy. So fine, you need your setup there, but fucking dude, give me something. Don't Zack Snyder me with Rebel Moon. You know, same thing. It's just a long time to set up something, and then but you don't get any type of reward after the first one. You're just kind of like, okay, cool. So they set it up. Now I have to wait a year to actually to watch the actual movie, or like when something actually happens. I don't know what my rating was, but I don't think I was.
I feel like if I gave it 3 stars out of politeness, you probably gave it a 2.5 because you're a bit more scathing than I am.
And that was also a movie I saw at home too. And I feel like this movie is a theater movies, so maybe that affected that. But I was also just very bored.
I watched it twice. It came out the weekend of my birthday, I believe, in 2021, and I was excited for it, but it didn't deliver anything to me. And it's not like I have a thing against Timothée Chalamet. I've seen a lot of people, oh, he's a twink. Oh, he sucks. He's a good actor. I'm sorry. There's not that many good young actors under 30. He's one of them. And he's great in the movie. He's pretty good in the first one, but he doesn't have anything to really do. The second one, he's wonderful. He's not the best. Probably, that's kind of hard to say. Anya Taylor-Joy plays a fetus, an embryo. That tadpole I posted everywhere, that was her in the movie. She's on a press tour because she played that in the film. It's hard to not make Dune weird. And I just kept thinking, though, I like Denis Villeneuve for the most part, but I couldn't help every single time I would see Austin Butler's big egghead and Dave Bautista looking pale and Stellan Skarsgård. I kept thinking, wouldn't it have been fun if the modern incarnation of this man could do it today too, and it would still be what I want. But wouldn't it have been fun to see what a vintage Tim Burton would have done with Dune? If you just kept on that trajectory of using the weird auteurs to helm this series, since we had David Lynch in 84. There you go. There's Anya Taylor-Joy. Beautiful as ever. Her eyes still look like that today. I enjoyed Dune Part 2.
Well, I think you need that for something as crazy as this story, right? You need to have someone that has a very distinctive visual style, that is not afraid of going crazy with the designs for the characters, that this, I'm sure not on many drugs, author was when he wrote this. It's always funny to me thinking about that Austin Butler character's name. What is it, like something Idaho? Right?
No, that's Jason Duncan. Momoa's character, Duncan Idaho.
Oh, is that? Oh, right, that's true. Because so you build this entire universe that, you know, out of your imagination, then there's this sand and these giant worms and this fat, disgusting character, and just a lot of like very creative different ways that you go with this story. And then one of your main characters is called Duncan Idaho. It's just, I don't know. When I heard that, I was like, wait a second. Why does it sound like they did the superhero movie version of Dune and that's who they came up with? You know, mm-hmm. I feel like maybe a different combination of states with a different name wouldn't sound like that. And Duncan Idaho would be like the superhero movie version of that name, you know, where it's like, oh, what's a douchey name and a random state. And there you go.
Duncachino could have been his character name. That could have really been Jack and Jill, the Adam Sandler movie.
Very ahead of his time, Frank Herbert, for like 50 years.
That's right. I just started reading. I read Dune years ago. I read Dune in like 2018 or 2019. And then I never read Children of Dune or Dune Messiah. There were 6 books by Frank Herbert before he passed away and said, hey, son and friend, take it on. It's your property now. Go make all the sequels. And now I guess they still do canon books and comic books and all the sort, which aren't really, everybody knows, unless the author is doing it, it doesn't count. It's not real. But I started reading abruptly. I skipped three books and I started Dune, God Emperor of Dune, which everyone is like, that's the weird one. And that is
Okay.
certainly a weird book because it's all about Timothy Chalamet's son. Timothy Chalamet plays Paul, his son, Duke Leto the second, deciding, yeah, I'm gonna atrophy. I mean, it's very actually, you were saying he's ahead of his time. He really is, though, with the disabled fetishism and all that, because he atrophies his legs and his arms and decides to become a sandworm. And then he resurrects Duncan Idaho and keeps him as like a personal boyfriend, sidekick, slave, concubine. And he just keeps cloning him over and over and over every single time he dies. So that's what that book seems to be about. It's very different.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like something. I don't know. This extended universe just sounds like let's just milk as much as we can from this as long as people still care. And I mean, I guess they gave him a couple of movies, so it makes sense that they would try to do like the thing that Star Wars does too, where it's like, oh well, there's also this extended novels universe, and there's comic books, and then there's also, I don't
Well,
know, video
I think they're
games with different
gonna,
stories.
I think they're running the gamut. If this movie continues to perform well, they're gonna try and do the whole Frank Herbert series, because the next one will be Dune Messiah, I believe. Maybe it's
Okay.
Children of Dune, I think, comes third. I don't know. I'm not that familiar with the series, to be honest with you, but I'm curious to see where they take it. I know they're planning a series as well called The Witches of Dune for Max, excuse me. If that's
Yeah,
even still around in a year.
so they're just trying to like do the same mistake that Marvel's doing, where it's just like, well, one was successful, so you know what that means. Let's fucking milk this cow as much as we can right now that people still care. Who cares about quality? Who cares about, you know, keeping the thing that makes people like the movie? Because I'm sure the other things that come out are not gonna be, you're not gonna get the same director to begin with. And then it's just gonna be, hey, do you like Dune? Okay, well, there's three series about side characters that nobody even gives a shit about, but it's connected to Dune, so you have to watch it. And I feel like the whole you have to watch it to know what's going on. Marvel did it very well 10 years ago. I just don't think that you can pull that off anymore because of how diluted, no, diluted, not diluted, diluted everything is. Where if one thing hits and it's the one thing that, I mean, I'm sure they were expecting hundreds of million with Dune 1, obviously, it's a big studio movie. But I just don't think there's that. I don't think people are as passionate about things like this, or maybe not in the mainstream as comic books became with those heroes, right? So I didn't do that. I still haven't seen, I think, one or two of the Thors, and I haven't seen like before, you know, the Endgame one. And I feel like that worked back in those days. Media has changed so much. And those days, what, 10 years ago? But media has changed so much that now, whenever they announce something like that, or whenever they're saying, oh, did you like this? Well, now we're going to do this and this and this and this and this. I lose interest completely. And I wasn't even interested to begin with. But then, because I know how studios work and I know that the quality is not going to be up to par, you're going to get whatever actors, you're going to get whatever writers and whatever paint by numbers directors, where the product is not going to be as good. And why would I invest my time on it?
Do you think that Dune is too weird as a property to actually be, sorry guys, for those in the video tier, my autofocus was wigging out there. Do you think Dune is just too weird of a property for it to have the same sort of success as something like Star Wars or Marvel, where even when those get weird, they still water it down a bit. They try to make it a bit more friendly to mainstream audiences. And even when it does get weird, it doesn't get weird in the way that Dune would get weird.
Maybe because I feel like Dune is a lot hornier and a lot more grotesque with the visual style and the monsters and creatures. Star Wars still feels very kiddie, even when
If
it
it
gets
feels
serious.
when I read the Dune book, I'll tell you this too, it felt more biblical and biblical, not in like the Zack Snyder Superman feel good way, or the way that Luke Skywalker is, you know, whatever, and Darth Vader, you know, not in that sort of way, but just like in a matter of fact sort of Old Testament biblical, which is, you know, I don't think that's something that is as easy to swallow as a, I don't know, like Father Stew, you know.
I don't know. I think I'm glad the second one is better, definitely. But again, I don't think I did. This was a movie that I was even going to watch or was interested in, unless I saw it in theaters. And I guess the reviews were positive enough. But what you're giving me, or what you're telling me about it, is kind of like, yeah, okay. I was so put off by the first one. The one time that I watched it, where I'm just kind of like, I don't know how much money it's made. I'm sure it's made enough
I think it made
to
80 million domestic, and it might be around 120 million international, which is not, it's not out of the park, and it's also not terrible. The first Dune movie, granted, this was still during the lockdowns, and they were releasing all of their movies onto HBO Max. I was just thinking about this the other day. It was so fun to have HBO Max, and they put a new big movie up there once a month. That was really cool, even if it murdered their internal financing. The last Dune movie, I feel like it hardly made money back, if it did, because they don't account for the marketing budget within the budget that's reported. So it probably put them in the red, if anything. But this movie, I think it's going to do well. I don't know if it's going to do the numbers that they needed to do to justify a full film series and television series.
It's apparently made almost 200 already, with worldwide is 178,
Wow. Okay.
81 domestic, with a budget of 190 million apparently. So yeah, it's going. I don't think that we're gonna ever get the hits that we got in the past decade. I don't think movies are billion-dollar movies anymore, and I'm trying to think as to what could be the next billion-dollar movie. Did the last Batman even make a million?
A billion? I
A
don't know.
billion,
I don't
right?
think so. I think Joker was the last big profitable comic book movie that came out of Warner Brothers.
And boy, is that even because I'm starting to think, okay, so back in the 2010s. No, Batman made 674, and Joker made, yeah, a billion. Okay, so back in those Marvel versus DC days, any of those movies could make a billion, right? Even at the end, when they were, I don't know if any of the latest phase, maybe Black Panther 2, maybe.
I think that one wound up doing well also. And I think you mean Marvel. DC has always had a track record where they've struggled with anything that isn't Christopher Nolan.
Okay, yeah, you're right. Okay, so Black Panther Wakanda Forever made 859,000. I mean, million thousand million. I just don't think that the movie event thing, and it's crazy because I think probably COVID killed that. The whole going to the movies to watch a blockbuster thing, I'm not sure that's still a thing anymore. For a movie to make that amount of money, especially because we don't have any franchises at the moment that people are clamoring for as much as they were when that run was going on. And
What
I
about the
also think that.
MonsterVerse? They played Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire, right before Dune Part 2. And I felt as secondhand embarrassed watching that as I did that Asian Girls Trip movie that they tried putting out last year that was immediately forgotten. It was instant
What?
100% on Rotten Tomatoes and then out the fucking back door. You probably don't remember that, thankfully. But this
What, say that again?
Godzilla.
What is that movie?
There was
What?
an Asian. They were trying to do the movie Girls Trip. Remember that with Jada Pinkett Smith and Tiffany
Oh,
Haddish?
yeah.
But they were doing the Chinese version. We're going back to China. And then I fell in love with a Chinese man. And all my pussy's dribbling and there's drugs in my pussy and my ass is farting. And it was just the worst trailer I've ever seen to a movie.
I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah. I think they try to make one or two of those a year and they never work. Whereas,
well,
like,
they're
hey,
gutting all the
Let's Do Bridesmaids again.
Yeah, I guess it did all stem from Bridesmaids, didn't it? That was that Amy Schumer stand up. That's all the source of that terrible, hey, girls are gross comedy.
Yeah.
Cool. I hate that shit. Anyway, The Holy Mountain was a hell of a lot better than what I was expecting. I don't know about you. I saw that, you know, even though you struggled to watch the movie on this go around, you gave it 4.5 stars on Letterboxd before you reported watching the movie. What's the deal, Hans?
Well, I think I had already had it on my Letterboxd from a while ago, but I had seen it before. Like, I knew what I was getting into. It's not that I have a hard time. I just had a lot of shit to do. But I also wanted to give the movie my undivided attention because I feel like this type of, even though I honestly don't think it's as deep as many people think it is, there's a lot going on in every frame, not just dialogue-wise, but also visually, that I feel like this is one of those movies that, I mean, seeing this in the theater must be awesome. You know, the sound and the visuals.
I was thinking that. When I watched it, I started saying this before, it was on archive.org, and it was immediately concerning that it was 2 hours long, but then it also said language, Spanish, no subtitles. I was like, huh? Oh, I guess I should have expected that. But mine, I don't know about yours. Mine wasn't in Spanish. Mine was in English.
Yeah, this movie, wasn't in Spanish.
Yours wasn't?
I don't think so, no.
You don't think so?
Well, I don't know because I understand both of them, you know? So I'm like, wait, was he speaking Spanish or English? It doesn't make a difference to me.
I understand a little Korean. I can tell the difference between English and Korean.
Yeah, I think mine was in English.
Okay.
I don't know.
Will say this movie has one of my favorite shots of any movie of all time. And I'll see if I can pull that up real quick so I can illustrate that, because that's better seen and not heard. And this is a reason why you should sign up for patreon.com/lowres, at least the $5 tier, or you can be like Hot Dog 10 and do the $100 tier and pick the next movie we cover for an episode, even though we spent 30 minutes talking about Dune, which is still technically related to this, because Jodorowsky, I watched this and I could start to see what that may have been like. I understand first why he was attracted to that property and why he might have helmed that property. As stripped down and crazy and practical and boots on the ground as this type of movie is, which I admire greatly, even if he did blow up some frogs, I'm definitely sure some of those frogs were actually blown up for real. I think it's a very visually fun movie.
Well, they were conquistador frogs. They're the bad guy.
Of course, yeah. They're colonizing. They got to get Yep.
Yeah. If you want, tell me which scene it is. I have the movie here. Download.
Oh,
it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I mean, we could just watch it on archive.org right now.
Well, we can do that, but I have an HD copy of it on my computer. I think I'm.
Hey, mine was an HD copy. What do you think? I was watching a VHS of it. That would have been tough. But if we could just go over to that part that you're referencing, before the frogs do get blown up, there is a montage of these beautiful dressed up lizards. And there's one shot in particular among them that stands out to me as one of my favorite. I would probably say it's in my top 10 favorite film shots of all time. You know, remember that Twitter account, Every Frame a Painting?
Yeah.
That's what I think about when I saw this shot. There you go. This is it. This is my favorite shot of the whole movie. This slow zoom in on this guy. This really made the film for me.
Why? It just made you happy?
It absolutely did. I was about to go out for, I was about to pause the movie and go out for a walk before this came up. And I was like, well, now I have to continue. I can't just interrupt what's happening here. This is cinema.
This Aztec lizard.
This shot right here inspired me more than anything I saw in Dune 2. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, let's not get to the frog part. Oh, that one's wearing a helmet covering his eyes.
Yeah, I don't want to risk alienating anybody on our Patreon or Patreon itself for animal cruelty, even if it's in a movie. Also, there's a lot of questionable stuff in the Holy Mountain in terms of how people are dressed, and specifically young people are dressed. I don't know if you recall, early in the film, there's a march of boys that just parade out into the open and hardly have anything on their being.
Yeah, and they start throwing rocks at our hero.
Yep.
Who's put in like a crucified position, and then he wakes up after being hit by rocks. This dirty Jesus-like man that wakes up in like a dumpster and is cleaned up by a man with no hands and no legs.
Yes, I think. Yeah. He's a paraplegic. Quadriplegic, excuse me. He has no arms or legs, and he's very sad frequently in this movie.
Yeah.
I really do miss when people would just cast real freaks. The last time anyone did that, it was Jonathan Glazer. It was Under the Skin. It was The Man with Elephantitis. And now they're doing another movie with that guy, and they said, hey, we don't even need you. We have a prosthetic that Sebastian Stan is going to wear on his face so he can be you, and you can go home.
No, that sucks. I hope he still gets paid for his face.
I'm sure he was, but probably the same amount as he would have been if he had starred in the movie in its entirety, I would say. I don't know anything about this, but I'm just spitballing here. I'm assuming that's the case, because why else would you do that? Seems like this is the big era for silicone taking the place of ugly people in movies.
That sucks. I'm not happy about that at all. Because you're just getting pretty people paid so that they can look ugly. So just hire ugly people. There's ugly actors there too. We need the work.
I was going to say, we're kind of the part of that problem, since we put Jerry in that mask for Mass State Lottery. So
it's very elaborate. Because we couldn't find a 150-year-old German who wanted to fly into Quincy, Massachusetts to appear in a couple of scenes, you know. So we had to work with what we had at the time. We didn't have a budget.
What we had at the time was Eric Roberts. Eric Roberts was going to play that role, but he wanted to do it for one day. And then I said, how much are we paying Eric Roberts? Okay, why don't we just spend that same money on a really cool silicone prosthetic? And that's what we did. And then Jerry became that character.
Yep.
And that was Jerry's, I think, and not to make this about anything but the Holy Mountain, but that was definitely Jerry's best day. Like when we put Jerry in that mask, it occurred to me, this is how you use Jerry. This is how Jerry works as an actor. And this makes sense because his role play that he does over on Twitch, check out I'm Bloom Online, probably informs that. Once there's a veil that's put over the face, his actual self comes out and he's, you know, and it's like, okay, if we ever have that character, you know, if there's any character that requires something like that, Jerry's going to excel in that path.
Now that you mentioned that, the scenes when we were shooting by the beach when it was actually Jerry, I feel like he struggled a lot more with those lines.
He really did. He really did. And this is nothing bad about Jerry as an actor because we reshot the scenes. Fun fact, we went down to the beach where we were shooting the scene, and we had technical problems, obviously, because the wind, and we didn't have the best gear at the time. But Jerry was struggling. Jerry had a hard time, even though he was rehearsing at the production house. He was struggling, and we said, all right, listen, let's just break. Let's go back. We'll eat. We'll go shoot something at the karaoke bar or something, and then we'll do this tomorrow. We'll do it later. And then he did it a hell of a lot better the second time around. But the difference between that and when Jerry was acting as the Zeger character in Mass State Lottery, I think, is two completely different Jerrys as an actor.
Yeah, well, he ended up going to that pizza place where he would get pizzas almost daily and talk to the waitresses with a mask on. And was,
yes, you know, so Jerry, okay, so here's another thing, too, you're going to see him behind the scenes. And I wish we had gotten more of this, but it was such a last-minute thing. Jerry just kept the mask on, and then we went out. And then we got dinner, and Jerry was driving in this very thick, sweaty mask. But he kept being the character out in public and talking to people and making remarks. And it was hilarious. It was cracking me the fuck up. It was great. So anytime in the future we have something, Jerry's going to be that. Jerry's our Andy Serkis, I guess we learned.
Yeah. Yeah, he's our masked whatever you need.
Yep.
Whatever VFX, Jerry's the voice. It's like that guy, that creepy Spanish actor that's very long and very skinny that plays every monster character there is in Hollywood, apparently. Mm.
Yes. I know who you're talking about. Right. Well, he will also do, that guy will take any Kickstarter campaign video. I've seen him pop up and, hey, we're fundraising, and he probably knows the movie's not going to happen, but he wants to get the paycheck. It's like $900. You'll say, I'm in the movie. All right, we'll play it that way. All right. So yeah,
didn't he play the Abe character from Hellboy too?
I'm sure he did.
Yeah, I think he did. Javier Botet. Yeah, it.
He was, yeah, right. He was the leper in It, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Anything very tall, long, gangly, lanky. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's our Jerry. That's that. Whenever we need a character,
whenever we need a leper, we think of Jerry. Yeah.
Whenever we need a disgusting character that's falling apart and almost dying.
Jerry. That's right. I will say too, I know the movie hasn't come out yet, so this is meaningless, but I have a real idea now. We've toyed with, it's been a frequent recurring joke of Mass State Lottery too, but I have a real actual idea now for what a sequel could be that I think I would like to do. So right, I'll tell you it. About that. I'll yeah, okay. It's our characters are married and go to heaven.
Okay. So we kill ourselves in a very romantic. So it's just an hour and a half of us just
floating to heaving
on a, yeah, laying on a on the ground, and then in the last 2 minutes, we each just grab a gun and shoot ourselves in the head.
It's not even that. It's picks up with that. And then it's me and you standing in front of a green screen with angel wings making small talk for 90 minutes. And we'll need $1 million to shoot this the right way.
Okay.
So yeah, if anyone's listening and wants to invest, we will take any deal you put on the table for $1 million. But that's the movie.
Yeah, and if you've heard this podcast enough, you've heard how great my improv skills are, so you know that's going to be a hoot for an hour.
Your improv, no, listen, your improv skills are actually good, except when I say, hey, Hans, go.
Yeah.
And then you're a deer in the headlights. Yeah.
When I'm on the spot, it's like, ah.
My it's not great.
Blank completely, yeah.
Holy Mountain, what is this movie about? I still don't know. I know that there was some messaging thrown in every 40 minutes or so about evil corporate Western capitalism, but
yeah.
I didn't glean anything further than that. It's cool. I like the movie. To be clear, I gave the movie a positive review, but I don't know what there is to be analyzed here.
I think from what I was able to get, which is not really, I don't really think, and if you've heard me before, I don't know if you figure this out, I don't really think about movies that much. Like, I'm not that deep where I'm, you know, sitting there trying to figure out, okay, so what does this scene mean? Or oh, this character looked this way, so that must mean that this or this other. I'm really not that deep of a person. Like, I try to understand what's going on in the moment, but I'm not someone that goes back to revisit movies multiple times to see if I understand. I think the only movie that I've ever done that for was Eraserhead when I first saw it, because I was like 18, 19 years old. And I don't think I had ever seen anything like that at the time. So I was like, well, I need to watch it again, see if I can figure out what's going on. And I still not sure if I got it. For this movie, because of everything that happens, starting with like the Jesus-like figure, and then when it starts moving into the planet characters and how everyone is just looking for enlightenment and just looking for immortality and just everyone is looking for the beyond life, I guess. Because when the Jesus character goes into the tarot room, And then he starts meeting the planet people, and they end up going towards the mountain to find enlightenment and immortality. And then when they get there, the alchemist, the Jodorowsky character, is just like, ah, I'm just fucking kidding with you. Immortality is not real. So I feel like the message at the end of the movie, it's kind of just like shit is not that complicated. And instead of searching for enlightenment or anything deeper than what life actually is, just live the life. Or at least that's what I got from it, because of how everything is represented in it and how everything is kind of gross and kind of very crude and presented in a very matter-of-fact way, without any type of censorship or any type of holding your hand and being gentle to the audience. But instead it's like, here's how it is, and we're just going to show you what life is like. So looking for enlightenment, like all of those characters, where at the end of the day is kind of pointless if you don't live the life that you have right now. Or at least that's kind of what I got from it.
No, I think you're probably spot on there. That seems like a very open enough idea for Jodorowsky to want to plop into a movie of this sort. Have you seen any of Jodorowsky's other movies? I feel like maybe we talked about this very briefly on Babang. I have seen one other film of his, but it's been too long for me to actually recollect anything about it. But it seems to match his MO. When you see him talking in the Jodorowsky's Dune documentary, he's all about that sort of ethos and those themes, and that is what's emphasized is important to him.
I've seen El Topo, which is his first big movie, I think. Yeah. Which is like a crazy Western.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also been like 10 years. I saw this and El Topo and the Holy Mountain back in my schooling days, which was over 10 years ago. I remember parts of it, but I enjoyed it. I couldn't tell you how much I remember from it. And I've seen parts of The Dance of Reality, which I think is based on his life, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that came out around the same time as the Dune documentary. And I remember checking out maybe about 10 minutes of that just to get a taste of what his directing style at the time was. And I think he had reached the point that every elder director reaches where they fall off, their style's not quite what people remember them for or want to remember them for. And everything that's done after a certain period is like, okay, well, we've got the money to do it. Maybe technically and visually it's not going to be the most impressive thing, but this is still a master's voice at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And I think it was just too late in his career. That was not a good starting point for me or for probably anybody. And I bowed out quickly on that movie. And also, I think it stars his son, who is not...
Yes.
Not a professional actor, I don't think.
How long ago was that, though?
That was probably the same time Jodorowsky's Dune came out. It was a 1-2 hit, because I was suddenly made aware of who Jodorowsky was, and I wanted to start to investigate his filmography a bit more, but that was the most recent thing. I was hoping that would be my entry point, but it really was the poorest choice for it.
I think it's kind of weird to see how his movies used to look and how that movie looks when it comes to HD video. It's a lot cleaner. I honestly don't remember much of it, but I remember that I found it a little jarring after watching El Topo and Holy Mountain, that both feel like 70s movies. Mm-hmm. And like the style and the visuals and the way the camera moves and the way that everything feels, as opposed to this movie from 2013, where it's like HD and it feels very clean, very modern production.
Yeah.
And because I haven't seen the movies in between, I haven't seen the, you know, Santa Sangre. Oh, that's it? Just one? Okay. Well, there's this big jump from 2000, from 89 to... Oh, hold on. I have
2013, right? Because he was working on a couple of projects in that interim, and he had put out some graphic novels, didn't he?
Oh yeah. 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 He did a bunch of comics. He wrote a bunch of comics from, I think his projects that he wanted to animate, but it also didn't end up working, or no one wanted to give him the freedom that he wanted. So then he just said, fuck it, I'll just write them myself. And then he got, Morbius, who's a Moebius, who was this visual artist from France, or was, I don't think he's alive anymore, who did his Incal comic that I believe is getting an animated movie or
well
animated
that was supposed to be
soon.
I think I was gonna say Taika Waititi was announced to direct one of those movies. I believe it was the Incal, and I don't think it was supposed to be animated. I think it was supposed to be a live action project.
Oh, is it? Okay, let me see.
To my understanding, anyway, I mean, I could imagine him directing an animated feature, but that isn't what was said in that Instagram. And look, he might not even be attached anymore since the last Thor movie flopped, and this Next Goal Wins movie was pretty terrible, if I'm being truthful about it. Like, I wanted to like
really?
That movie. It sucked. It was really not what I've come to expect from his directing. Before we get back to the show, I want to encourage you to visit patreon.com/lowres and sign up for our $5 tier right now. We have video installments of every episode of Movies and B-Bang you listen to on Spotify and Apple Podcasts weeks before they go out, and bonus shows you won't find anywhere else. We also have our ultra-exclusive $100 tier, which allows you to select one movie we'll watch for our program Movies, a podcast by The Act of Cinema. We typically have an eclectic mix of films that we usually cover, but you can make it as obscure or as mainstream as it gets. And yes, I will take pleasure in the fact that Hans will have to endure a whole viewing of your movie without napping. So head on over to patreon.com/lowres and sign up today.
Oh, it's a screenplay that he wrote with Jermaine Clement from, what's that show? There's that other New Zealand
Flight of the Conchords.
Guy. Yes, yeah. Well, there's no updates on that, so 2021 is the latest update that I can find.
They should just give him Dune now. Just let him do the Worm Dune book I'm reading right now.
Yeah,
why not?
Give him the Witches series, or one of those whatever series they're going to be throwing in HBO Max, so that I can actually be interested in seeing it, because That's the thing with Jodorowsky. Like, even if you're not a huge fan of what he's trying to say, which I'm not, I mean, hearing him talk, I rewatched Jodorowsky's Dune recently, and hearing him talk, it's kind of like, oh, cool. Like, it's cool to hear someone that's this passionate about what they do, and like how deep he goes into everything and how intense he is. But I think that same intensity is also kind of like, okay, Alejandro, like, all right, like, fucking, we're just having fucking toast and coffee. It's not that complicated. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like he's a very intense person that you can't just like.
You think he keeps that up in his personal life?
Maybe. I mean, every interview that I've seen, he's very intense and very everything is very. And it's just like, do you ever just sit next to a buddy and like fart and just giggle at the fart? Or do you like try to find a meaning as to why this fart was fabricated in my colon with the, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't know. And maybe because he's old as fuck now. Well, he was the same in the 70s after looking at some interviews and some videos of him as how intense he was.
I would feel like this type of movie, you would have to have a really great sense of humor to be able to make this film. And especially the way that it is, which is, I mean.
Well, I don't know. If you look at those interviews, if you see the way he explains everything, he believes everything he's doing, and everything is like very like, I'm fucking showing you, you dumbass. Like, this is the art, and this is the message, and this is the thing.
Okay, he's very pretentious then.
It's very artsy, very very 70s psychedelics artist type of thing. You know, where he's spent 2 years in, I don't know, Amsterdam or whatever, and they went on a bunch of psychedelic trips and they saw the truth, and that type of guy, you know?
Yeah.
Which is like, I mean, fine. I want to see your art. Don't want to hear you talk for that long.
Yeah,
you know, it's one of those things. Yeah.
There was an explosion of that type of person in the 70s once that idea of consumer travel and exploration of drugs did become rampant. I think My Dinner with Andre shows that very well, with Andre Gregory being very similar to what you're describing here. Although I will say, and look, I haven't watched Jodorowsky's Dune, the documentary, since it probably came out, but I remember him being very funny. And now I'm questioning whether or not that was intentional funny, like humor or not, or if that was just a product of his personality, his age, and how he was choosing to illustrate things verbally.
I think it probably has more to do with that and also the people that he would interact with back in those days. Because I think Luis Buñuel and Salvador Dali were his friends. So it was like that was the type of like wild thinker that he was dealing with at the time. So I'm sure that even if he wasn't that type of thinker, to keep up with them, you kind of have to become that, you know? And there's a story in that documentary about how he got Dali. I don't remember exactly like 100% what it was like, but he pretty much just like convinced him by talking to him and like going overboard as to what someone like Dali, who was apparently very particular as to who he would work with, agreed to play. I think, fuck, what was the character that he was supposed to play? A very flamboyant, he was supposed to play. God damn it. Sorry, Dell.
I remember, all I can remember is Orson Welles was supposed to be the Baron, and then Mick Jagger was going to be the character that Sting played and Austin Butler played. And I think he was going to cast his son as Paul for Dune as well. He's very hung up
Yeah,
on casting his son, nepotism.
which would have been a not great decision, I don't
Yeah, that's
think.
great if you have Orson Welles and Salvador Dali and Mick Jagger. And then your son. Your son is the centerpiece of this whole thing.
Oh, he was supposed to play Emperor Shaddam the Fourth. Don't know who that is.
Okay. The great thing about seeing all these Dune movies and reading Dune is you absorb maybe one fourth of the character names.
Oh, is the Christopher Walken character?
Got it. Okay, that's who I was thinking.
Okay. Yeah, so he was supposed to play that. And the costume that they did for him looked like this. So that's the type of visual that Jodorowsky was going for.
You know
Very
what it reminds me of? It
like.
reminds me of, God, what is that John Carpenter movie with Kurt Russell? Big Trouble in Little China. That's what it reminds me of.
Yeah, low pan.
Yes, that is the look that I'm seeing here. Yeah, kind of similar to that, I guess.
I see it.
Maybe there was an inspiration there. They did break down in the documentary how Jodorowsky's materials were passed around and reused because he had H.R. Giger doing a lot of stuff as well, and that trickled into Alien and Star Wars and all this other stuff. He's definitely somebody as a director that I plan to explore more of, but maybe cautiously. It kind of sounds like he only has four movies, though, from what you're saying.
Well, the first one, from what I understand, it was like a it's not a student film. I don't think he was a student anymore, but it was like a very independent. Fando and Liz is from 68. It's a very independent black and white movie. I saw like 5 minutes of it and I was like, okay, so this is the beginning. This is where it starts. Makes sense. It's like watching those Peter Jackson shorts from the beginning of his career, even though he didn't really do much of that later in his career. But you see where like his visual style started there. And then you have El Topo, you have Holy Mountain. I'm not sure what Tusk is. I've never seen it. And then you have Santa Sangre, which is another one that I've heard about more, has a better rating too. And then Dance of Reality.
And that's it. It kind of seems
There's
like he
a
went on a similar trajectory to Alex Cox, if you're familiar with his career at all.
Alex Cox.
Alex Cox did Repo Man, he did Sid and Nancy, and he was a very visual out there director. He was going to do Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas before Terry Gilliam wound up hijacking that movie. And then a certain point arrived where the technology allowed him to execute his vision in a way that would be significantly easier. And he did a movie called Repo Chick. And I recommend, I feel like maybe we've watched the trailers before, maybe not on this show, but on Civic TV, almost certainly. Repo Man is a great movie with Emilio Estevez and Harry Dean Stanton. Repo Chick is not even close to that. And for some reason, they just announced, I think it was in Variety or something, they said, oh, Alex Cox is finally making a sequel now to Repo Man.
Okay,
But he did
finally.
already. He did it. It's
Yeah.
fucking terrible. It looks awful. Look it up real quick. Let's just watch the trailer to this. But Jodorowsky reminds me a lot of Alex Cox in that sort of visually flamboyant way, and then also the fall off, which I don't think is unique to these 20th century abstract directors.
Well, Jodorowsky tried to do a real movie, I guess you can call it. Some movie called the Rainbow Thief. But I reading the Wikipedia, it says that it was his first British film. He was frequently threatened by the producers not to change anything in the script, effectively restraining further artistic involvement in his part on his part. He has since disowned the movie. Why would you hire a director like Jodorowsky to direct a movie about Peter O'Toole and Omar Sharif
Whoa.
where they are friends?
Can you pull up a poster of this movie? That sounds very interesting to me, actually. Peter O'Toole and Omar Sharif worked with Jodorowsky in like a traditional movie. Where did this fall in
Very.
his career? I don't care if he disowned it or not. I'm very curious about this because
Let me see.
I
So
kind of like Peter
that's
O'Toole.
1990, right after Santa Sangre, and after that, that's probably why he took that break, because of his experience working with the studio.
Yeah, maybe. Okay.
It
That's interesting.
is
I
this.
will check that out. That's a terrible poster. That's clearly
It
like
is.
MGM put out a DVD in 2004 and they were like, "Fuck, blue and orange. What can we use here?" He looks very creepy. He looks like the bad guy from Poltergeist too. And
This guy in the back looks like, remember when the devil in that Bible series looked like
look like Obama, yeah.
Obama?
Is that
Yeah.
Christopher Lee? On the left,
This
conductor
one?
looking guy, yeah, maestro.
What? I'm not sure. Let's see. Rainbow.
Let's
Let's
check
see.
this out. I bet you this is
Omar
not
Sharif.
bad.
Yep, it is.
Okay.
Omar Sharif,
I mean, it
Christopher
looks like a
Lee.
Jodorowsky movie. It also kind of looks like
Yeah, it
Pee-wee's
does.
Big Adventure. Okay, this looks cool. I mean, it looks like a cool 1990 artsy movie, and 1990 did not have too many artsy movies, you know.
Let me pull up the trailer for that Repo Chick, right? 2009.
Oh God, yeah. It was 2009. 2009, he does Repo Chick. And then all of his movies after this look exactly like this movie. I mean, honestly, you can hardly call them movies, but
Oh, wow. Oh, no. Oh my God. Oh my God. This is like the Angry Video Game there movie.
Yeah, it really is. I'll tell you what, can you pause this real quick? Everything in Dune looked great, except there is a gladiator battle with Austin Butler's character and three prisoners, and the backgrounds for, I don't know who did it. Maybe they ran out of money and were like, fuck, let's just send it to India. They're as flat as what you're seeing in this trailer. That's not an exaggeration. The scale of Austin Butler's character and the three people he's battling are also weird and off compared to the stadium around them. It's the only scene in the movie that doesn't look good. And it's also for whatever reason, this feels like something you would do out of necessity, because I've done things like this before. They made it black and white, and it's the only scene in the movie that's in black and white. And it's like,
you think they were trying to hide something?
You knew it looked like shit when it was just its natural color. Yeah, I think so. I think that played a part. Anyway, we can resume this. But literally, as flat as the backgrounds you were seeing in this movie. Like that. Yep, like that.
That's rough.
Yeah, I don't understand what happened.
This kind of also reminds me of that Tim and Eric Billion Dollar Movie.
Yes. Yeah. By the way, I started watching Nathan For You finally.
Yeah.
I watched the first episode. I laughed a lot during it. So
with the yogurt one?
Yeah, it was the yogurt and then the pizzeria with the 1-inch pizza. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah. When they get a free pizza and it's just a little tiny pizza.
Yeah.
Yeah, this looks like garbage. This looks so bad. I'm surprised that, like, because this is the first time that I ever hear about this, but it seems to be on par with what's this director, Fateful Findings director?
Neil Breen.
Yeah. Like, what's the difference there?
There's no difference. Unfortunately, I hate to say it, there's no difference. And we haven't seen what Alex Cox has been up to lately, but he's older now. And I know that he had done a couple of things since Repo Chick that were on the same level of quality as it, which is terrible because I thought he was a great director. He was a fantastic director during his day.
Do you think he's just old and doesn't, like, he's not able to? No, it's impossible. How can you not tell how bad it looks? You know?
I don't know. I honestly do not know what it is. It could just be that his means have been reduced and he's talked himself into the idea that it looks good. Maybe for, no, not even for 2009 did anyone find that good. Like, no, you know, not, horrible. No, no, it's a stretch.
Well, especially because you don't need that green screen. It's not like they're in space. They're outside of like a mall and they're in a room. Like, just get a fucking room. Go outside of a mall, you know? Like,
even if you did it for real with those same actors, you're still looking at a terrible movie, but at least it will look like a movie.
At least you will want to watch and finish it because it looks like a movie. Not like that, but it just kind of looks like a YouTuber that doesn't know how to use green screen is doing, you know, a critique of a movie or something. Mm-hmm. So they don't even have to try that hard. They just have to, you know.
You know what it makes me think?
I'm in the movie.
It makes me think, for some reason, it fell into his responsibility to maybe, like, traffic some money and put it through some. He had to wash the money, and he was like, fuck, I got to do this. What am I going to do? Repo Chick. It's almost believable. It's a sequel to a well-known movie I made 20 years ago. Maybe. And then he does it the cheapest way possible with actors from backstage.com.
He wrote it, too. Yeah, like, god damn. Okay, sorry, my autism. What the fuck? What is the point? Like, why?
Looks like Barbie. But look at the chair. The chair is clearly from Google Image. The bean bag is, it's all just nothing. It's nothing there. It's all green screen.
It's not even like properly erased here. You can see like the little pixelation here. And then the floor doesn't, like, that's not there. Like, none of this. And you can just get a fucking room.
Yeah.
And put those, I don't know, like, how little was the budget that everything seems to have just been recorded in front of, look at this shot.
Question. Can you go back to the original? Okay, never mind. My answer. I got my answer. Can we see what he's been up to lately? Because I've said this twice now. I know he was teaching film school somewhere, and he put together a movie with a bunch of his students. And I think that was Quantum Cowboys. I think that's what that might have been. Or no. I think it was the. This is acting.
Actor. Hold on. Yeah. My bad.
It was some Western.
Tombstone Rashomon?
Yeah. That was it. That's what he put together.
With his film students?
That's right. He wrote it. He directed it. The poster looks like something you would probably find on DeviantArt. That's like fan-made. Okay, well, this looks better than Repo Chick, but that's not exactly a high bar to cross.
Weird trailer too, right?
Maybe he just lost it. I don't know. Let's get out of this. I know I saw something from 2023, though. There's a short he did in 2023. That will give us the
Eventos en
best
el
look.
campo, field events, or events in the field. That's what this is.
Starring Alex Cox and Rafael Rodriguez. Is this not
Oh, it's so
available?
beautiful.
Okay, so it was for a film festival. Cost $54,000.
It's a film. It says it's a film. How long is it? It's a short.
It's a
Okay.
short. Can we? Yeah, maybe it's on YouTube or something. Alex Vox.
Thing.
Let's see.
Oh, so it's a song? Oh,
He
we're
did a
getting an
music
ad. Hold
video.
on. Yeah, it seems like that's what that is.
All right. Well, he's working on a new sequel to Repo Man. The only way
Oh,
that I could
shit.
see him making something of quality is if somebody like a Jordan Peele intervenes, like Jordan Peele intervened in Spike Lee's Downward Spiral and said, "Hey, I'm going to produce your movie. We're going to take you seriously again, and we're going to get it a
What
proper distribution deal."
it is, so it's not a music video.
He's wearing a
Oh,
mask. This guy's wearing a mask.
they're all
What?
wearing masks.
Why? This looks like Repo Chick.
Okay, that looks, yeah, I was about to say. Okay.
Okay, it's just a cameraman
Yeah,
following
this
Alex
is.
Cox around an Old West set. Everybody's wearing COVID masks.
Yeah, in the Old West. Okay, there's some mountains that they're definitely not walking in. Okay, all right.
Okay, so he went on vacation to Mexico and
With a body.
yeah, it was a $54,000 vacation. Are we supposed to be excited
Yeah,
about that?
that's
What's
not
with
a.
the fast-paced rock music at the very end of that? It was two old men walking around the desert looking at rocks.
Yeah, not a great nothing I would be excited about, I think. Repo Man 2. I think Repo Man just doesn't have sequels, let's just say. It's
Yeah,
just.
look, I feel bad now about comparing Jodorowsky to him because Jodorowsky, at
Yeah.
least, he kept it together, and Alex Cox cannot keep it together at all. Can you just quickly look up and then we can wrap up? What is the deal with the Repo Man sequel? Like, is there an actual company? Because I could imagine A24 being like, yeah, Repo Man's kind of a cool niche movie from the 80s. What has Alex Cox been up to? Let's just give him a $2 million budget and see what he does with it. And you might as well burn it. So let's see what this is about. I
For
saw it on something
sure.
like Discussing Film on X.
It says the story was reported by Variety, who confirmed that Cox will be in the director's chair with Kiowa Gordon from Twilight, starring as the punk-turned-repo man.
That sounds horrible already. You don't want a Twilight has-been that nobody's heard of before.
Yeah, playing the Emilio Estevez role.
Even if you had Taylor
It
Lautner,
says
it's going to be bad.
the new film will pick up right where the original left off, following Otto after a brief trip across the infinities of time and space, which was only aged them exactly 90 minutes. According to filmmakers, Repo Man 2 will deliver an enthralling mix of punk energy, existential comedy, and unconventional storytelling, navigating the absurd and chaotic world of Repo Man into the new age of nuclear brinkmanship and driverless cars. Produced by Lorenzo O'Brien, who produced Narcos, with Buffalo 8 Productions, Adam Harris Engelhard, Matthew Helderman, and Luke Taylor.
Wow.
No idea
Okay.
who any of those people are.
He's got real money behind
GM
him.
management. Yeah, it says GM management will executive produce. Don't know what GM management is either. It was announced in the Berlin Film Festival that in the 90s he attempted to make a sequel with Willem Dafoe and Estevez and Harry Dean Stanton, but the story never came into fruition as a film, and it was instead ultimately used for the graphic novel Waldo's Hawaiian Holiday.
Okay.
Oh, they mentioned Repo Chick here. 2009, Cox wrote and directed another entry in the Repo Man universe, Repo Chick, named by Consequence and Punk.
The Repo Man universe. Yeah. Does he have it? I wonder how he feels about it now. I wonder if he does regret it. Because if he has any sort of creative integrity and the vision that you could, you know, trust that there's something else to, then he would, right? I feel like 5 years after that, he's going, what did I do? 2 years, maybe. What did I do?
I mean, I'm sure he's happy now because he's getting this opportunity because of that movie, not because of Repo Chick, you know?
Sure.
So I'm sure that for this, when did Repo Man 1 came out? 80-something?
It was 87, 86, something like that.
This 30 years that have gone by, well, I guess if you don't count 2009, which I'm not gonna for that movie, I'm sure that now he's excited that he did that Repo Man movie, because otherwise I don't think anyone will be thinking about him or trying to, you know,
trying to
work on any
happen.
Of his other movies, I guess. Yeah.
All right. Well, my apologies to Jodorowsky for that comparison. But I will be checking out more of Jodorowsky's work. I'm quite interested in checking out El Topo. I know that's his other classic that people rave about. I have never watched it, but I will. I will give it a watch. And thank you again to Hot Dog 10 for contributing to the $100 tier, making this episode happen. You can do it as well if you're listening to this or watching this by heading on over to patreon.com/lowres. And for $5 a month, you'll get exclusive episodes, video episodes, and a lot more. $100, you're going to pick the theme of the episode. Any movie, any film, we will cover it, okay? So anyway, we can wrap up on that note. What do we have in store for listeners to come? Do we have anything scheduled for shows for the immediate future? I don't know.
Both of the Wolfman episodes are out, right?
The three? They're done as of this episode.
Okay. I think this is the next one.
Okay,
I don't
yes.
Think we have anything. I mean, I guess we could do... did you end up watching Zone of Interest?
Not yet. I will be, though. I watched all of Jonathan Glazer's other movies first. I went back to Sexy Beast, and I was like, wow, that actually is still a very extraordinary movie. Birth was great. Birth was really complex and frustrating to watch. The whole theme of that movie is, do you love your spouse enough to become a pedophile? And the answer in that movie, apparently, is yes. Then I watched his short film, The Falls, which I was not into at first, and then it kind of ended cool, and I liked it. I liked the visual presentation of that. I was very surprised to see Jonathan Glazer is not an old man. He's a younger man.
Hmm.
He's got long hair. He's cool. He's like a 90s music video director guy. Like, I mean, he's probably like 50 or almost 60, but I was expecting a much older, snobby British guy, somebody like Peter Greenaway, you know?
Yeah, he's... How old is he?
I bet you he's 58.
He's born in 65. No, how old is he? Doesn't say. The fuck, Wikipedia? 58. Wow. Right on the spot.
Got it. All right. Yeah. And my light just died here. So that's definitely the end of the show. It's very dark. It's very off-putting. Maybe I'll just put you on cam for the remaining time. But yeah, maybe we'll do a Jonathan Glazer retrospective. I think we should get back into themes, because even though we have movies like Dune 2 that are out that are good, there's not going to be enough to sustain doing single film shows for right now from 2024. They will go back. Another thing I was thinking about doing was, are you familiar with George Harrison's production company?
No. The Beatle?
Yes.
No.
Okay. He had a production company in the 1980s called Handmade Films. And I was thinking maybe we could get into some of the movies that they had put out while he was still in charge of the company. There did come a point where he resigned and passed it off and somebody else was doing it. And I think the last movie they put out technically was 127 hours, but there's so many good movies. Yeah.
Life of Brian,
very great British films. I just watched Time Bandits yesterday. I don't like Terry Gilliam, but I like Time Bandits. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Sean Connery's good in that too. You know,
do you not like modern day Terry Gilliam? Is that why?
Or, I don't like any Terry Gilliam.
I don't.
I don't. Okay. I liked Fear and Loathing. That was the one movie of his that I enjoyed. Everything else I've seen from him across the, like, I've tried to watch Brazil several times. I just can't vibe with it. Time Bandits, though, was the ticket. It was a fun kids movie.
Have you ever seen With Nell and I?
Yes, he didn't do that one, though. That was
Bruce
Robinson.
I'm just looking at the lists.
Oh, yeah.
Looking at the
list
from the... There's a lot of really good movies here.
The first movie I think they put out was The Long Good Friday, and that might be their best film. Mona Lisa's great.
No, the first one is Monty Python's Life of Brian, and then a movie called A Sense of Freedom from 78.
I watched a documentary about the creation of this company, and it was born out of Monty Python losing an investor, and Eric Idle was friends with George Harrison at the time, and he was like, hey, do you want to maybe be a producer on this thing so we can make it happen? And he was like, yeah, sure, whatever. And then he partnered with this guy, Dennis something, and they were like, why don't we just make actually good British films, because nobody is doing that right now, and that'll be our niche. And they were going to call it Handmade British Films, but then they just went Handmade Films. And there are some great standout movies in the 1980s that they put out through that company that I think could be cool for a theme for an episode.
Yeah, sounds good. I'm done.
All right. Maybe we'll make that next then. So that's been movies for this week. Thank you for listening.